Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network, the home of Representative Paul Brown, who believes that Barack Obama is putting together a secret police force not unlike the brown shirts of Germany back in the 20s. Speaking of Germany, that period of time, we have two anniversaries, yesterday and today. 70 years ago, yesterday was the Night of Broken Glass, Kristallnacht, in Germany. It was a pogrom that resulted in, a couple hundred Jews were murdered. 25 to 30,000 were arrested and sent to what was then called, euphemistically, concentration camps. I remember hearing that term when I was a little kid. I used to think, is that where they make the people go think? Concentration. 70 years ago, last night, was Kristallnacht. 90 years ago today, World War I came to an end. You remember that, the war to end all wars? That was it. And, of course, it never did end. World War II was just a second act of World War I. Camillo Bica, who goes by the name Mac, he's a veteran. He was in the Marine Corps. He was an officer during the Vietnam War. He founded and coordinated for 5 years something called the Veterans Self-Help Initiative. It's a therapeutic community of veterans suffering from PTSD. He is a longtime activist for peace and justice, also a professor of philosophy, has a PhD now at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. He's a member of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and on and on and on and on. He had a little paragraph he sent out today. This is what he says regarding Memorial or Veterans Day. Many march to remember, others to forget, but for those who truly know war, no parade is necessary to help us remember, as the memories of war are with us every day of our lives, haunting our existences. Nor does marching in a parade help us put to rest the turmoil of a life interrupted and impacted by war, or forget the dying and the killing. Parades accomplish nothing other than to allow those who make war easily, or who ignore completely its reality and horror, to feign support and appreciation, and to relieve their collective guilt for immoral war. Marching in a parade neither educates nor informs about the realities of war. Rather, it celebrates and perpetuates the myth of honor and glory and the old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. I will march no more. Yeah, I've always had a hard time with Veterans Day too. When I understand fully, I heard what Veterans Day, what marches like that are all about. I heard a Bush today in New York. Was he on the USS Intrepid giving a Memorial Day? Or I'm sorry, I keep saying Memorial, giving a Veterans Day speech. That is just monumental in its hypocrisy because of what the Bush crime family has done to veterans. It's astonishing that this guy can actually get out there and talk about veterans. And the real thug, Dick Cheney, was at Arlington National Cemetery today. Oh, my God. Giving a speech. Oh, it means it is sweet and honorable to die for the fatherland. Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. You knew that. You knew that. Oh, it's from Horace, the poet. Oh, it was in a poem by Wilfred Owen titled World War I, Dulce et decorum est. All right. Regarding Veterans Day, scientists at the University of California, Davis, found that veterans exposed during the Vietnam era to the defoliant Agent Orange are twice as likely to contract prostate cancer as the troops who did not have to deal with that toxic defoliant that we dumped all over another country. Incredible. The doctors or the scientists say the cancer is likely to be an aggressive, deadlier form of prostate cancer, which kills nearly 30,000 of us men every year. New cases are being diagnosed this year at the rate of 509 per day. The study said exposed veterans had more than three times the rate of metastasized cancer, which means it has spread to other areas. One of the study authors said he expects thousands more veterans exposed to the defoliant to be diagnosed in their 60s and at greater than the normal prevalence rate of men getting this form of cancer. Agent Orange, for those of you who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, was named Agent Orange because of the color of the bands around the 55-gallon drums that contained it. About 20 million gallons were sprayed between 1962 and 1971 on Vietnam. And, of course, the human carcinogen inside Agent Orange that is so deadly is dioxin. This chemical was used in many areas of Vietnam, but especially in places where they had the triple canopy jungles near the Cambodian border. Some 300,000 of 3 million veterans of our invasion and occupation of Vietnam have undergone tests for prostate cancer. About 100,000 have filed claims alleging their cancer was caused by Agent Orange. In addition to prostate cancer, Agent Orange has been linked to soft tissue sarcomas, Hodgkin's disease, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The Vietnam War, the gift that never stops giving, does it? And when you couple that with the names of the nearly 60,000 dead on the wall in Washington, D.C., and the 2.5 million dead in Southeast Asia, you got to wonder to yourself, don't you? You know, what in the name of hell was that all about? You know, we major clothing manufacturers now have factories there, and that's where a lot of American jobs have gone. And Colin Powell, when the occasion arises, gets up on a stage in Hanoi and puts coconuts on his breasts and dances around like a hula girl. Isn't that nice? Vietnam. The risk of being really, really evil. I'm sure that someone out there is probably thinking, well, prostate cancer, huh? An increased rate, three times the normal rate. Tens of thousands more men are going to die as a result of our involvement. There are some people probably thinking, you know, karma's a bitch, isn't it? Huh? Karma is just an absolute mind scrambler. You go halfway around the world, dump deadly carcinogenic poison all over another people for no reason. And the government doing the dumping tells its unwitting soldiers, hey, we're fighting for freedom, mom and apple pie. Oh, just, you know, take the orange bands off and dump it out the back of the transport. No problem. Son of a bitch. Now imagine what's going to happen with all the troops that are coming back from the wars in which we have used depleted uranium. There's only one answer, of course. You know, no more Memorial Days because there would be no more war. Oh, you're a peace creep, huh, Malloy? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Look at all we've done with the saber and a gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, and I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw their cities burning, I knew that I was learning. But I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plants. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason. Call it love or call it reason. But I...
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. You know, talking about war and remembrance and veterans, so on and so forth, whatever happened to the war in Iraq? It's kind of disappeared, hasn't it? The economic crisis has sucked all the oxygen out of whatever topics we discuss anymore around the so-called water cooler, plus the election that we just held. And, you know, Americans are now, we really don't care about Iraq and Afghanistan unless we have a loved one there. We just don't, because so many of us are thinking about keeping our homes or our jobs. You know, how do you show interest in death and destruction half a world away if it doesn't directly affect you? This is how Cheney wanted it. This is exactly what they wanted. No, you know, no involvement. Just no. Nobody has to get involved. It's an all volunteer force, so you know who cares, right? It's pretty disgusting. Aaron Glantz writing today. Oh, is it at the Times? I think he said most Americans want to put the war behind them, but that feeling is based not on a coherent critique, but on a kind of collective exhaustion. We're tired. Simply want to move on. Forget the conflict ever happened. And Aaron adds, it is the same dynamic that led to the betrayal of more than 3 million Vietnam veterans. You know, tired of it. A therapist and Vietnam veteran said, quote, when I go through airports, I see soldiers just sitting up against a wall by themselves. No one goes up to them. That positive energy toward them has faded. No one is spitting or shouting, but they're still left with the fact that they're responsible for what they did or didn't do, and they're supposed to think about that alone. This therapist says that given the experience of Vietnam vets, and most of the, that the American people ignore their veterans at their own peril. According to the Veterans Department, 18 veterans commit suicide every day. 250,000 sleep homeless on the streets on any given night. By 1986, the National Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Survey reported that almost half of all male Vietnam veterans suffered from PTSD and had been arrested or jailed at least once. Of the ones who suffered from PTSD, 32%, 34% had been jailed more than once, and 11.5% had been convicted of a felony. The therapist says, quote, we're going to repeat that same thing. I can sense it. If we don't take action and Congress doesn't create services to help these folks out over the next 10 or 15 years. And there are other consequences that people don't even know about, of course. But the story has little hope. Barack Obama, when he takes office in January, will be a president who's shown an interest and a commitment for caring for Americans' veterans. So maybe the madness can stop, you think? Friend sent in this poem, Anthem for Dead Youth by Wilfred Owen, regarding our young soldiers. What passing bills for you who die in herds? Only the monstrous anger of the guns, only the stuttering rifles' rattled words can patter out your hasty orisons. No chants for you, nor bombs, nor wreaths, nor bells, nor any voice of mourning save the choirs, and long-drawn sighs of wailing shells. The shrill, demented choirs and bugles calling for you from sad shires. What candles may we hold to speed you all? Not in the hands of boys, but in their eyes shall shine the holy glimmers of goodbyes. The pallor of girls' brows must be your pall. Your flowers, the tenderness of comrades' minds, and each slow dusk, a drawing down of blinds. Anthem for Dead Youth by Wilfred Owen. Yeah, Taps. Taps, indeed. I don't like these kind of holidays. I really don't. I don't like Memorial Day either. Decoration Day is, or Armistice Day is what they used to call this holiday when I was a kid. I was telling Kathy today, I can remember going downtown in Toledo, Ohio with my mom when I was a kid, and the women auxiliaries of the various VFW posts would be out on the street selling the little poppies. Do y'all remember that? Little fake paper poppies with the green wires on the bottom. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Something next
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
It's about 25 before the hour regarding war. I know we're not supposed to talk about this, you see. The only way you're supposed to talk about war and conflict is to wave the flag and talk about the glory of it all and how we have to defeat our enemies. And it's very sad, but, you know, war is hell and people die. And you usually hear that from people who would no more put on a uniform and pick up a weapon than they would run naked through Macy's the day before the Thanksgiving parade. It's just another example of right-wing hypocrisy and duplicity and stupidity and using Americans to further whatever agenda it is that's being furthered, whether the invasion is Grenada or Panama or Vietnam or Lebanon or Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, whatever the deal is, it's a shame. And of course, a man much more articulate than I could ever hope to be, Smedley Butler, a general and two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, wrote his famous screed about war as a racket back at the turn of the 20th century. Any of you mouth-breathing right-wingers who want to see everybody go put on a uniform and wave the flag and kill people. You should read it. That's on the assumption that you can read. But George writes in, Mike, I strongly recommend a book by Dave Grossman, a former Army psychiatrist, called On Killing. It's about what happens to normal human beings when they're forced to kill other human beings. Nothing could be more appropriate for Veterans Day than understanding what war does to those that participate in it. I looked at the situation a different way after reading the book. George. P.S. And after reading that book, I finally understood why they trained us the way they did in boot camp. The training taught us to shoot first before we had time to think about it. Normal human beings have an aversion to killing other human beings, and that was the way to get around it. PTSD is the result when you have time to think about it afterward. And I guess the thing that is most anger, makes me the most angry, is the fact that in the vast majority of instances, the people who are the loudest advocates for armed conflict are people who have never served, never will serve, whose family members have not served in the military, if served is the right word. And I don't think it is, unless we're talking about serving the interests of the warmongers. I guess there is a time and a place for war, although I have a hard time thinking about that, except maybe I've been brainwashed into believing that World War II is the good war. Well, if it was, what about World War I, of course, was a bunch of the heads of interrelated families in Europe having their feuds and deciding to see that 4, 5, 6, 20, 30 million people died so that the king of this country or the archduke of that country or the leader of the other country, all of whom were cousins, could somehow settle their differences, right? Isn't that what World War I was about? And World War II is an extension of World War I. So what the hell was it about? Well, and as far as the other big conflict, Korea and Vietnam, what were they about? Oh, that's right. They were about containing communism. The Truman Doctrine got us into the Korean War. And I guess it was the Truman Doctrine that got us into to Vietnam. But yeah, anyway, we're not supposed to talk about these conflicts in a way that could be interpreted as being critical of the sacrifice made by the people, the Americans. We don't really think about the people, the other people that died. But the Americans who were murdered, who were killed, or gave their life, take your pick of the term, in these conflicts. We're not supposed to talk about, we're not supposed to question. Agent Orange, don't bring up Agent Orange. Depleted uranium, don't bring it up. Civilian casualties, no. John McCain, oh, he was a war hero. Yeah, okay. Audie Murphy, arguably, was a war hero. John McCain was a war criminal, still is a war criminal, will be a war criminal until he dies, and then he will be a dead war criminal. And the list goes on and on. But I have difficulty with days that commemorate the people, the soldiers from this country who have died in these conflicts, because I feel just tremendous rush of shame that so many Americans, and again, let's just set it aside. Let's just talk about Americans. I have a tremendous, overwhelming sense of shame at how many Americans have died doing something that they were told was defending mom and apple pie and the flag and the homeland and so on and so forth, when in fact that was a monstrous lie. A monstrous lie. And you're not supposed to point out the lie. Ever. I mentioned a few minutes ago, Georgia Representative Paul Brown, B-R-O-U-N, a real freak. A lot of people say, why do you live in Georgia? And I keep saying, well, it's the weather or the topography or whatever. But yeah, Georgia is an ass-backward state, if ever there was one, in terms of our politics. It's horrifying. If you ever wanted to see the complete uselessness and idiocy of the Republican Party on a local level, you ought to follow the Georgia legislature when it's in session. Or as we call it down here, the Georgia General Assembly. It is an exercise in asininity, the likes of which I don't think exists anywhere else except in other southern states. Here in the South, we are insane. We are religious freaks. We have the highest rates of divorce and child or teenage pregnancies and child abuse and spousal abuse and so on and so forth. But this is Jesus country. Yeah! Georgia Representative Paul Brown, I got an email here from Donald over in Augusta. He said, did you see what that moron said about Obama and the brown shirts Gestapo of Nazi Germany? Yes, I did, Donald. Donald writes, I live in the district in Georgia that elected this half-wit to a second term in Congress. I was eating dinner with some friends the other night, and they were lamenting the notion that people outside of the South look down on us and don't think we are smart people. They're just a bunch of yahoos. Well, yeah. We keep electing people, Donald writes, like that cowardly jackass Saxby Chambliss and this complete moron Brown to go to Washington and represent us, and we expect rational people to think we have any intelligence at all. Brown's entire campaign consisted of touting his Christian faith, being a good family man, being pro-life, nothing else. That's all it takes to win office in this state. There's got to be a Republican in Georgia with an IQ above that of an ice cube. It took everything I had to not to completely insult these people by validating the concerns of people outside of the South, but they are associates of mine, so I held back, much to my surprise. Do you ever feel like the smartest person on earth because you live among such dumbasses? Donald in Augusta. No, I just tune it out, Donald. I have to. Anyone who lives here in the South... And I'm sure it must apply to other pockets of the country. But, you know, if you look over in Arkansas, what happened there, the only state in the union to give John McCain more of an advantage than George Bush got. Jesus Christ. In the New York Times today, the interesting map, the title of the article is For the South, A Waning Hold on Politics. A once influential region becomes a virtual outsider. That can only be good. But if you take a look at this map, they've got it in blues and then kind of pinks and then reds, of course. And the only place outside of Arizona, or is that New Mexico? No, it's Arizona. The only place you see a lot of red is in this belt that goes from southern West Virginia down through, parts of Kentucky, Tennessee, North Georgia, Alabama, almost all of Arkansas, southeastern Oklahoma, northeastern Texas and the Texas Panhandle, and southern Louisiana, a little bit of the Florida Panhandle. That's the only place you see where, according to the color coding, more people voted for John McCain than voted for George Bush. These are people who wanted more. Now, this also happens to be the most uneducated belt in the country. It also happens to be the most religious, fundamentalist, Christian, Protestant, arm-waving, snake-handling, Lysol-drinking, freak belt in the country, too. What is it? I wish I knew. What is it? Is it because the North kicked the South's ass back during the so-called War of Northern Aggression? That's what they call it down here. And it made everybody stupid for the past 20 generations. I could never figure it out. But here we are, down here in Dixie. You damn right, boy.
Rage, Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
On what used to be solid ground, nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Originally, when all those dollars they...
It's about 10 before the hour. We call it Veterans Day here now. It used to be called Armistice Day in Canada. It's referred to as Remembrance Day. And Roz writes, Mike, as you know, in Canada and all the British Commonwealth, this day is known as Remembrance Day. The traditional poem read or sung at all the memorial services is In Flanders Fields, written by a Canadian, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, who is also a doctor. It is truly beautiful. I attended the memorial services today in the little town where I live and, of course, got teary when I heard it. I include it here, but I know you must be familiar with it. Regards, Rosalind. Yeah, we read this when I was in elementary school, Roz, long time ago. It's very short. And this is how it was written. In Flanders fields, the poppies grow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing, fly scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up your quarrel with the foe. To you, from failing hands, we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. You remember that? When you were, if you were an American, you probably, of a certain age, you probably learned that or had your social studies teacher read it to you. Back in the day, I guess I don't know. Do they still do that, Kathy? When you and I are in two different generations here, when you were in elementary school or junior high, did they did you read that poem?
I don't think so.
No, you didn't.
I don't remember. All I know, I think, is we had the day off.
Yeah. I don't think they even do that anymore. I guess it is kind of silly to think that a war that ended 90 years ago, the war to end all wars, the war to make the world safe for democracy, yada, 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 yada. War that was that after which came the deaths of, how many people do you think have died in wars since then? 150 million, 200 million? Oh, we're not supposed to be talking about this. Memorial Day or Veterans Day or Remembrance Day or whatever it's referred to. No, not Memorial Day. That's another one. Veterans Day, Remembrance Day, Decoration Day, Poppy Day, whatever it's called. It's a day for furniture store sales. And in these times, it's also a day for commercials on television that tell you you can get 60 months, 0% financing, if you qualify, for a new Ford SUV. Is that a little cynical? Yeah, I guess so. When we come back after the break here in that's coming up, we have just two quick sound bites from Caribou Barbie, her interview with Fox News' Greta Van Susteren. And then I'm going to declare a complete moratorium on Caribou Barbie unless she, unless she does something like, there's nothing she could do. I'm sick of this woman. I am absolutely had my belly full of her, and I'm sure she feels the same way about what she's gone through. So we're going to play these last two sound clips when we come back after the break, and then we're going to just, that's it. For Sarah Palin, as far as this program is concerned. I promise. Because I don't like her. I don't like her attitude. But we want to play this sound clip for you when she talks about how if God opens the door for her to to become president. If he even opens it a crack, she, you know, she'll get the sign. Oh, my God. God will show me the way. And the way she says it, she says, I'm like, okay, God, if there is an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. Like, I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is, even if it's cracked up, you know, a little bit. Maybe I'll plow right on through and maybe prematurely plow through it, but don't let me miss an open door. And if there is an open door in 12 or 4 years later, and if it's something that's going to be good for my family, for my state, for my nation, up to for me, then I'll plow through that door. This is the future of the Republican Party, which is proof, maybe, that there is a God. Huh? You think? Can you imagine this freak being the nominee 4 years from now? Ah! So, after we come back, we're going to play two more from Caribou Barbie, and that's all! That's all, Truth Seekers! Then we're moving on! And I'm going to try my damnedest to take some phone calls tonight. I really am in the next hour. So if you have something you've been wanting to say on the program, we will try to make room for you. Also, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and Lou Dobbs are responsible for yet another death, just as surely as if they were there for the beating. This was in Patchogue, New York, middle-class village in central Long Island. We'll tell you about that when we come back to it. All right, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Thank you for sticking around. All right, Caribou Barbie, she had an interview with Greta Van Susteren on Fox News the other day, yesterday, I believe. And this is her reaction to Susteren says, I would be remiss if I didn't ask this. 2012. You know what's going to happen. We're going to have a 2012. Now, I don't know. I don't know what this means. Greta Van Susteren is a lawyer. Let me do it again. This is Greta Van Susteren. I would be remiss if I didn't ask this. 2012. You know what's going to happen. We're going to have a 2012.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask this. 2012.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen? We're going to have a 2012.
We
are going to have a 2012. I don't know who's going to be a part of it. You know, I have faith is a very big part of my life, and putting my life in my Creator's hands. This is what I always do. I'm like, okay, God, if there is an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is. And even if it's cracked up a little bit, man, maybe I'll plow right on through that and maybe prematurely plow through it, but don't let me miss an open door. And if there is an open door in 12 or 4 years later, and if it's something that is going to be good for my family, for my state, for my nation, an opportunity for me, then I'll plow through that door. But I can't predict what's going to happen. You know, I can't predict what's going to happen a day from now, much less 4 years from now.
Oh, really? You just can't predict? Oh, no. Why don't you get that snake handling witch exorcist out of that came by your church? That guy from, where's he from? Ghana? Kenya? You know, that, or the state of Africa? The country of Africa, you freak. I wish I could understand these people, and maybe I could sympathize with their ignorance, but I can't. Van Sestren then asked Palin why she lost so much of the female vote. Yeah, the women didn't vote for you there, Caribou Barbie. That was the sole reason the McCain camp put her on the ticket in the first place, to pick up the disgruntled, and God knows they were, Hillary voters. Well, did you know Sarah is baffled because, you know, she, like, considers herself a feminist, you know, like, yeah, like, you know, really.
Why do you think that you didn't get more women? I mean, you're a working woman. You've been successful as a governor. Why do you think some women probably weren't lured to your ticket? I don't know, but I'm going to work harder on that. If anything ever happens in the future in terms of me running for offices, to kind of put more women at ease, I guess, with the idea of me or any other woman serving in higher office. I would like to see perhaps some of these feminist women, and sometimes, you know, I consider myself too as a feminist, whatever that means. In fact, I subscribe to Feminist for Life. I'm a pro-life woman who wants to make sure that, you know, we cherish the sanctity of life. And I would like to see more of these feminist women open their minds too, and not be perhaps narrow-minded in consideration of a working mom who represents much of what they have fought for all these years, also with equal opportunity.
God.
And I would like them to just be bold and brave and kind of at least explore someone like me. Sure, like to be able to meet more of these women and find that common ground and similarities, and have them not to be afraid of finding out what perhaps a conservative woman represents and believes in.
Oh, my God. You know, where to start with this? I'm not going to waste my time or yours, but when she says, I would like to see more of these feminist women open their minds and not be so narrow-minded in consideration of a working mom, does this dumbass not understand that the feminists that she's talking about are the ones that honest to God got out there and fought to make it acceptable for a woman to be both a mother and a worker in, you know, the post World War II Rosie the Riveter age? Does Sarah Palin not understand that? Well, the answer is no, of course not. She has no sense of history whatsoever. And Feminists for Life is not a feminist organization at all. It's another one of these phony-ass religious organizations that takes from some civil rights movement, either women's rights, students' rights, gay rights, minority rights. It borrows the language, but does nothing about the actual message. They, Feminists for Life, are no more interested in feminism as it is generally understood as a noun in most of the civilized world. They have no more interest in that than they have in calling themselves spaghetti heads. I mean, they pick a term. Hi, I'm a fedora. You are? Yes, I'm a fedora for life. You are. You're a fedora for life. Yes, I am. Hi, I'm a broccoli for life. You are a broccoli? Really? Yes. And I wish that these other types would understand that we broccolis for life are, you know, we have common ground and similarities. And the feminist women shouldn't be afraid of meeting a broccoli for life woman. I just because I'm conservative doesn't mean that, and it just kind of dribbles off, doesn't it? Okay, I'm going to try to make sure that we never again on this program provide any sort of a sound clip of the governor of Alaska. Marcelo Lucero. By the way, I got an email. It is Patchogue, New York. What did I call it? Patchogue. It's Patchogue, New York. A village in Long Island. Anyway, Marcelo Lucero was killed last Saturday night near the commuter railroad station in Patchogue. He was beaten and stabbed. The friend who crouched next to him in a parking lot as he lay mortally wounded and dying said Mr. Lucero, who was 37, had come to the U.S. 16 years ago from Ecuador. Now, the police in Patchogue have arrested seven teenage boys who they said had driven into the village from out of town looking for Latinos to beat up. The police report said this mob of teenagers cornered Mr. Lucero and another man. A prosecutor at the arraignment yesterday quoted the young men as having said, "Let's go find some Mexicans." They've pleaded, of course, not guilty. The county executive in Patchogue, New York, issued a news release denouncing this latest apparent hate crime in Suffolk County. And as the New York Times points out today in an editorial, a possible lynching in a New York suburb should be more than enough to force this country to acknowledge the bitter chill that has overcome Latinos in these days of rage against illegal immigration. Now, where does that rage come from, truth seekers? First of all, it comes from these Klansmen who call themselves militias who are going to go down there to the Mexican border and stop them goddamn wetbacks from coming across the border to take our jobs. You know, the beer-bellied white guys that dress up in camo and take their 30-caliber rifles out into the desert and like to play like they're doing God's work, I guess. But the three people I find most responsible for this in media, they're not the only culprits, but the most responsible, are CNN's Lou Dobbs, the Excellence in Broadcasting's Rush Limbaugh, and this freaky little punk Sean Hannity, who nests in Long Island, I believe. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. So in Patchogue, New York, middle-class village in central Long Island, 37-year-old man from Ecuador who's been in this country since he was 21 was beaten to death by seven teenage boys. I'm assuming that they are white. According to one of the prosecutors at their arraignment yesterday, the young men said, "Let's go find some Mexicans," and they found to them a Mexican, an Ecuadorian, and beat him to death and stabbed him to death. For you know, I mean, this happens with alarming regularity, doesn't it? Huh? But these are people who are given permission to do this by Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and Lou Dobbs, and the lesser lights in this pantheon of right-wing murderers who infest talk radio. And again, these guys are all cowards, every goddamn one of them. I'm talking about the media types, the right-wingers on the air. They're all cowards. They hide in their very, very, very protected communities. Some of them now broadcast from their homes in order to stay insulated. They're terrified. They don't dare go outside for fear that a Mexican or an Arab or maybe even a Jew or a Palestinian or possibly a black person will come up and rip their goddamn hearts out and stomp it into the ground. But they love it when other people do just that. So, as the New York Times says today in their editorial, a possible lynching in a New York suburb should be more than enough to force this country to acknowledge the bitter chill that has overcome Latinos in these days of rage against illegal immigration. They go on to say, the atmosphere began to darken when Republican politicians decided a few years ago to exploit immigration as a wedge issue. They drafted harsh legislation to criminalize the undocumented. They cheered as vigilantes streamed to the border to confront the concocted crisis of Spanish-speaking workers sneaking in to steal jobs and spread diseases. Cable personalities, like Lou Dobbs, and radio talk show hosts, like Limbaugh and Hannity, and their lesser lights, latched onto the issue. Years of effort in Congress to assemble a responsible overhaul of the immigration system failed repeatedly. Its opponents wanted only to demonize and punish the Latino workers on which this country had come to depend. It is not yet clear how closely connected Mr. Lucero's murder is to this broad wave of xenophobia. But there's both a message and an opportunity here for officials like Mr. Levy, an immigration hardliner whose relations with his rapidly growing Latino immigrant constituency have been strained by past crises and confrontations. He must be Steve Levy, the county executive. Deadly violence represents the worst fear that immigrants deal with every day. But it's not the only one. It must be every leader's task to move beyond easy outrage and take on the difficult job of understanding and defending a community so vulnerable to sudden outbreaks of hostility and terror. Hannity and Limbaugh, of course, are drenched in blood, American soldiers' blood, and the blood of innocent Iraqis, civilians. People have been blown to pieces. But that's the nature of people like Hannity and Limbaugh. They are cowards. They are killers by proxy. They foment fear, cowardice, distrust. And I swear to God, sons of bitches like this, I don't quite get this part of my society that allows people like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Lou Dobbs to be on the air and to be paid millions upon millions of dollars to spread hate, suspicion, xenophobia, fear, contempt. I don't get that. They're selling something, and there's apparently an awful lot of people who love to buy it, and corporate America steps right up to the plate and sponsors it. Now, if that's not a working definition of evil, somebody tell me what is. Huh? Is that evil? What's evil? Is that evil? Or is some Mexican coming across the border because he or she is desperate for a job, because the jobs have been destroyed because of legislation passed in the 90s under the acronym NAFTA? And now whatever working society they had has been utterly just shoved down the crapper. So they come here. Because why? Well, there's still a few jobs that Americans won't do yet. But you know what, truth seekers? We're going to have to be doing those jobs pretty soon, right? Huh? Huh? We are going to be brasteros. Right? Because all the good jobs seem to have flown the coop. But it is Hannity, Limbaugh, Dobbs, cowardly, stinking, lying killers. They are as responsible as the seven men charged with the crime.
I left the handsome two-step, the good old boy in Tennessee. Now he's sitting on the sofa, he's looking for his supper, wondering what's become of me. I got a 008 Tina Martin guitar in the backseat of the car. Hey, I am leaving Mississippi with the radio on. Cause we can't find the friend, still got the radio.
Don't be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
It is 25 before the hour. One of the articles I read today that certainly was a bit unnerving was this one by... British journalist Martin Kettle, in it was in Britain's Guardian newspaper. He wrote that if this election had been stolen the way the last two presidential elections were, and the off term or the off year elections had been stolen. It is Kettle's opinion that the only alternative, well, this is what he said, if it had been stolen, it might have persuaded an entire generation of Americans. There was absolutely no validity whatever in electoral politics. Millions might have concluded that the only way to get the Republicans out of the White House would be by some form of armed insurrection. Whoa. Now, there's certainly a degree of hyperbole in invoking the danger of armed insurrection. But as World Socialist Website .org, WSWS.org, says in regard to this, nevertheless, there's a serious content to the warning he directs toward the political elite. He made his remarks in the knowledge that ever since George W. Bush came to power in 2000, thanks to electoral fraud and the disenfranchisement of many voters, confidence in the U.S. electoral system has been at rock bottom. Under conditions of acute social tensions made worse by the onset of recession, the situation in the United States is indeed explosive. Now, if you remember, prior to the election, the Observer of the UK, the Guardian's Sunday sister paper, reported how, amidst claims of a surge in support for Republican candidate John McCain, quote, police forces in major cities made extra security preparations for Election Day, end quote. Remember that? In Chicago, police all police leave was canceled. Off-duty firefighters were told to keep their kit ready at home. The unspoken concern was that if there was a surprise Obama loss, especially with the polls predicting a win, there could be civil unrest. Don't you love that euphemism? Civil unrest, rest unrest. Sleep, unsleep, huh? The article, and we quoted from it extensively on the program, the article went on to say that Detroit and Los Angeles were also deploying extra police out of concern for the potentially heightened emotions raised by the election. So, I completely agree, and people much smarter than I, where it concerns how these kinds of violent eruptions can occur, we're apparently very concerned. Very concerned. And I just wonder if who made the decision not to steal this election? Maybe it was the decision was made by the overwhelming number of voters who began with the early voting. Here in Georgia, early voting started a couple, 3 weeks ago, before the election, I should say. And many states, same way. You had to go to certain sites. But and about a third of Georgia voters voted before, who were eligible, voted before last Tuesday. So, had it been stolen, I think, you know, like I said, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, fool me a third time, I'm coming after you with a goddamn baseball bat. And I mean it, and I will break your bones. I really, really, really will. Over something like this. I mean, we dropped bombs on the nuclear bombs on the Japanese because they were trying to steal our democracy, right? Isn't that the reason we bombed them? Huh? 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 Isn't that the reason we set fire to Dresden? Isn't that the reason, you know, on and on and on and on? Right, right, because they tried to steal our democracy. Well, what about the people inside this country who have been trying to steal our democracy? What do we do with them? Make nice, all kissy face now, the battle's over. Come on, John McCain, you can go back into the fold. Come on, Joe Lieberman, all is forgiven. Come on home. Huh? Right? Hey, okay, sure enough. Well, we look how we handled the Japanese and the Germans, and to a lesser extent the Italians. Here we are, and look at the Vietnamese. All right, we're all friends now. We all shop at Walmart. We all drive the same kind of car, drink the same kind of coffee, eat the same kind of hamburgers. Right, right, right. So I guess there is room to forgive the Republicans, huh? Maybe not. I got an email here from who? All right. Well, no name on it. But anyway, there's a great comment on Balloon Juice, balloonjuice.com, balloon-juice.com. And this is what it says. For the last 8 years, the right has unloaded some of the foulest blank on Democrats, calling us traitors for opposing Shrub's folly, jeering at us for trying to mobilize against the most corrupt administration of the 21st century so far. That's a joke. And otherwise making it clear that they felt superior to us. And now they want to make nice? Blank them. Scarborough them. They helped to prop up this gang of morons and criminals, and I don't care how sorry they feel. They weren't sorry enough to vote against the Republicans in 2004. They weren't sorry enough to call for Bush's impeachment. They weren't sorry enough to call out the media for its continued blank, blank stories on made-up conflicts and obfuscations. All their apologies do not begin to heal the thousands of injured soldiers who were treated as blank by the VA. It doesn't rebuild New Orleans. It doesn't jumpstart the economy. And it doesn't begin to make up for the years of being made to feel we were traitors to our country for caring that the criminal in chief wanted to start a war based on a pack of lies. Well, in the meantime, they can get off the cross. A hard winter's coming and we need the wood. Now that website, balloon-juice.com, apparently was started by or run by John Cole. It says here a former conservative who saw the light about a year ago. Well, there you go, balloon-juice.com. And regarding all of this, the possibility of armed insurrection, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, it's not surprising that a Brit would think it likely that an election being stolen would tip the U.S. over into open rebellion. They, having experienced us picking up our muskets and throwing out our God-anointed sovereign, it would be nice to think that Americans would have sense enough to throw out the God-anointed Palin. But it's not likely that would happen until a majority of Americans were feeling the hardships that the bottom 20% or so are feeling now. With 50 million Americans who don't have health insurance and tent cities of homeless Yanks shown on the BBC, not because of some horrible disaster, but because of a harsh and unfeeling regime that is amassing huge wealth that would make King Midas blush, the English can't understand Why there aren't barricades in the streets? Our ancestors took on the largest and most powerful military in the world for less provocation. For hundreds of years, that was the only war the British lost. While it's true that the American Revolution was supported by only about a third of the colonists, and about the same number were right-wing, knuckle-dragging loyalists who opposed and persecuted the rebels whenever they could. About 1 in 60 Americans died in the war, mostly from the third who were rebels, and mostly from acts of terror or imposed hardships. Houses burned, everything they owned looted, people driven out, imprisoned, or murdered, even women and children. You can see why they were rather harsh to the Tories after the war, deporting thousands of them. The difference now is that the people affected are too spread out, but as times continue to get harder, the density grows. At some point, you will observe the phenomenon of emerging intelligence. That's what causes a flock of birds or a school of fish to turn in unison as if on command, even though no one's in charge. This is, in a way, the magic of Obama. He is persuasive enough to get a crowd to start thinking the same way and act as one. Unfortunately, this is also how an ugly mob works, but with no one really being in charge. Observe a Palin rally. She's not in charge, but they start acting in unison just the same. Yeah, we are on the brink of something. I realize the pressure has been eased a bit. The boil was lanced, this huge separating mass of pus and blood that has built up on the body politic in this country was lanced with the election of Obama. But we need to be careful. We need to be very, very careful right now.
I can't even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the...
Okay, Republicans, the pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Barack Obama has made it clear that he will hit the ground running. One of the things he's going to do, I believe, although there are conflicting reports now, is certainly review and hopefully close forever the torture facility at Guantanamo that the Bush crime family set up. You talk about a dark, dark chapter in this nation's history. This is unbelievable stuff. It's kind of like the prison camps during the Civil War. Andersonville comes to mind immediately, where Yankee soldiers were... it's just difficult to even describe. I can't describe it on the air, but... suffice it to say that the death and disease and destruction that occurred at Andersonville, I'm sure had some sort of counterpart someplace in the north, but Guantanamo and camp, whatever it's been called, I know it's changed names a couple of times. I wonder how the people who, the American soldiers who have worked there, What sort of PTSD, what sort of nightmares they're going to experience? And the people who do the torturing, the people who do the actual torturing, these are not humans. The people on our side who torture other human beings, and I don't care what the quote rationale end quote is for torture. You peer into the abyss like that, and the abyss becomes you. It doesn't look back into you. It actually becomes you. These people have to be absolutely soulless. And if they retain any sort of religious belief, their God must be a flesh-eating demon. It's horrible. Obama says, or not, no, Obama didn't say, the rumors swirling around his transition team is that Guantanamo will be closed. Five human rights groups are urging European governments now to accept Guantanamo prisoners who can't be sent home for fear of persecution. And a sixth human rights group, doesn't say which one here, has called on Barack Obama to sign an order shutting the prison camp on the day he takes office. The ACLU had a full-page ad in the New York Times. Maybe you saw it. It said, President-elect Obama, with the stroke of your presidential pen on day one of your administration, you can ensure that our government will be faithful to the Constitution and the principles on which America was founded. Give us back the America we believe in. There are several initiatives, if that's the right word, that Barack Obama can take on day one. He doesn't need the Congress. He doesn't need anybody. He can sign these presidential directives. He can get rid of the gag order, which said that any nation who includes abortion counseling in their population control or their HIV control programs would be denied funds provided to the UN by the United States in order to throw a bloody chunk of raw meat to the religious crazies in this country, represented recently by Sarah Palin. The so-called gag rule, the closing of Guantanamo, directives that are flying around D.C. right now. Bush and Cheney, actually mostly Cheney and his corporate handlers, are issuing directive after directive to further destabilize and destroy the environment, to gut health rules, to undermine even further whatever regulatory agencies are still operating at, what, 8% of capacity? CDC rules and regulations. They're trying to destroy everything, and they're succeeding. And what they're doing, they're putting people in positions in civil service jobs who will make sure that the destruction continues. A real purge is needed. I mean the kind where you walk through the ward with a Luger. I am just... My little mountain intensive didn't work at all, if I can say something like that. But I'm serious. I mean, how do you get rid of these vermin? At what point does utilitarianism come into play where you acknowledge completely and openly that certain elements of society have to be removed for the greater good? If you have gangrene on your foot because you are suffering from diabetes, what happens? Your foot is removed. If you get one of these flesh-eating bacteria that eats a hole through your arm and starting to work its way up to the trunk of your body, what do? You remove your arm. What do you do with people inside the running the levers of government and regulatory agencies and commerce, who are poisoning the entire system, who are destroying the foundational rules and regulations of this country, who persist, who will give us all the middle finger and laugh at the election of Barack Obama, as evidenced by some of the recent gibbering I've heard that is coming from the Limbaugh program and Michael Reagan and Hugh Hewitt and some of these other rat bastards. What do you do? Do you just say, well, okay, look, you know, kumbaya, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya, we can all get along. No, we can't. Rational people can all get along, even if they have differences of opinion. There's no question there. But when you have maniacs, killers, liars, stinkers, skunks, sons of bitches like this crew of right-wingers who infest media and government and commerce, what do? Do you walk through the ward with a Luger in your hand, or do you just sit back and say, well, I don't know. You know, What the heck? Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, Malloy, on Nova M Radio. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. We welcome your comments during this segment of the program about what we've been talking about. If you can stay a little focused, but if that is utterly and absolutely impossible, okay. 800-989-1480 is the number. Let's start with Bruce, who is in California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, good evening.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment on what you were saying last night about bipartisanship. First of all, I got to say that I am just as angry and PO'd. I don't know if I can use the word that go along with the initials, but as you are about the way the Republicans treated the Democrats all through their majority. Forcing them to have old hearings in closets and all that other stuff is just infuriating, you know. And my gut reaction is the same as yours, you know. Tell them to sit down and shut up, you know. That's what what I intellectually or emotionally want to do. Mm-hmm. But I've been thinking about it, and honestly, I really think that somehow we got to stop this game. And if Obama ran his whole campaign by not playing the game of politics, of tit-for-tat politics, and I don't know that really, even though it's so emotionally satisfying to just slap him down and use the nuclear option on him, it's probably, if you stand back and take a deep breath, it's probably a better idea not to.
I just completely disagree. I'll tell you where I start my disagreement. I'm disagreement with what you're saying. I am not infuriated with the Republicans because of how they treated the Democrats. I am infuriated with the Republicans because of how they treated this country, how they treated even their fellow Republicans out there in crazy land, how they treated the rest of the world. No, I'm sorry. This is not soccer. This is not a chess game. Politics in the United States, thanks to the Republicans, has in fact, or should be, has become a zero-sum game. If I win, you have to lose. You must lose. I also believe that in some of the ancient warrior class who used to say, defeat your enemy, and then go through the battlefield and eliminate the wounded. Because if you don't, they will rise up and come at you again. You have to understand something, Bruce. As far as I'm concerned, Republicans are subhuman. Anyone who subscribes to what has become the Republican philosophy of governance, to me, is an enemy of the state. They want to destroy my country. They want to destroy my family. They want to destroy my right to breathe air and drink water. Now, to me, that's worse than facing somebody on a battlefield. And the reason is obvious. If I'm facing somebody and I have a rifle and they have a rifle or whatever we have to try to kill each other, so be it. But these evil sons of bitches operate in the shadows. They operate by changing regulations. They do things that guarantee that the food I put in my mouth or the medicine I give to my child may be poison, may kill me. They make sure that up is down, left is right, truth is a lie, and a lie is what they operate on. No, I'm sorry, Bruce. No quarter. None.
Yeah,
none.
Well, you know what? I think you convinced me.
Okay. Well, I'm glad, and even if I haven't convinced you, I understand where you're coming from. I really do. Okay. You know, make nice, forgive and forget. I think that's exactly what Barack Obama is going to do. I really do, and for a number of reasons, but I don't think there's going to be a prosecution of George Bush or Dick Cheney or any of the people who lied this country into a war, and as a result of those lies, have taken the lives of uncounted hundreds of thousands of people. Now, that's a goddamn crime against humanity. That is an outrage. And it would seem to me that any modern god would cast those kinds of people directly into a fiery pit of hell. And we're supposed to praise them for their astute leadership? Oh, no. When I think about people like Tom DeLay and Newt Gingrich and Dick Armey and John Boehner and I'm just go right down the list. All these filthy, lying, perverted sons of bitches who have destroyed the country, destroyed our financial system, destroyed our military, destroyed our environment, destroyed our regulatory agency, absolutely corrupted everything, allowed corporate America to become the new masters, and opened the door, as Palin says, a crack, so that a corporatism, i.e. fascism, could rush in. And I am to forgive and forget? No. From this point on, until I die, which may be tomorrow, 5 minutes from now, or 20 years from now, but until I die, there is not an inch, not a centimeter of room inside me for forgiveness for what these evil, perverted, murderous sons of bitches have done in the past 15 years. No. Absolutely no. 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 Let them rot. I could not care less. My objective now is to watch over the next 2 years and to do what little bit I might be able to do to kick the sons of bitches even further out of government and then to go to work on the Democrats. Because there's an awful lot of Democrats who fit into this category, too. We've discussed that many times on this program. Oh, no. Oh, no. Forgive and forget. Let's all make nice, kissy face. I'm sure that's what the Barack Obama administration is going to do. I know a lot of people don't like Rahm Emanuel. I don't care for his politics. I don't care for his Zionist attitude. I know what his father did. His father was part of Irgun, a Jewish terrorist organization that blew up the King David Hotel to get the British out of Palestine. I know Rahm Emanuel's history, but I'll tell you what. Right now, you give me a hard-nosed son of a bitch like Rahm Emanuel, who probably hates Republicans not as much as I do, but enough to protect his man, Barack Obama. We can deal with Rahm Emanuel's personal points of view later. No, no. No mercy, no quarter, no nothing, absolutely nothing to these scum, these swine. I still live in a state that is controlled by these rancid sons of bitches. No. Sorry, Bruce. I guess I got a little carried away. But I'm sure you understand what I'm saying and where I'm coming from. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills in New York. Hello, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you?
I'll be better as soon as this... you know, I got it from my kid. Cold goes away. Another one.
Yeah. Well, your listeners sit through your colds about 3-4 times a year, I'd say.
No, this is only the second one this year. I've been keeping track now because
is that right?
Oh yeah, I work out like a maniac and I take C and zinc and yada yada yada. No, this
excellent.
only the second.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Second one.
To what you were saying, I would add that for the last 2 weeks, I have found myself in solidarity with the representative from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann. who want an investigation into un-American activities, and I couldn't agree more, Mike.
Yeah, but I think
ferret out this putrescence that has worked its way into the skin of the United States.
Yeah, but AJ, you understand.
And starting with the black-hearted Michelle Bachmann, let's start to cut them down.
Okay, but you know, of course, that she's referring to Democrats.
I know who she's referring to.
Right.
But I also know that with the election of Barack Obama, there's going to be a serious reevaluation in the next 8 years as to what is American and what is un-American.
Right.
And so I think we should go after these bastards at full tilt.
Hey, can you hold on? All right, let me put you on hold, AJ. I got to do a break here. We'll come back and pick it up from where you said, and I don't agree with you. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour, we were talking with AJ, the Music Factory, who's called in from the Catskills. All right, you disagree, take it from there.
Well, I disagree with you that there's not going to be any prosecution. It would be folly to think that there's going to be prosecution of George Bush and every single one of his minions. But I think before 8 years are up, you will see some of these spiders squashed, because the Attorney General is not going to have any choice. This administration is going to appoint a Attorney General who's going to do their job. So I think that, I'm all for going after these people in the Bachmann vein. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's start to, I said to you 2-3 years ago, you know how it is with listeners. We all think that we're the only ones who talk to you, so you don't remember any of this. But I said to you 2 or 3 years ago that, you know, bring back QAC. And I was only half kidding, because I can't think of anything more un-American than what these people have done to the country.
I do remember your saying that, but of course, you know, it happens when you create a monster like that, even though your intentions are good. I mean, Dr. Frankenstein had nothing but good intentions, and looked what happened.
I know.
So, yeah, sure. Maybe just hearings conducted by the ACLU.
Certainly.
Just anything to expose these bastards, even if they didn't wind up in prison, if they didn't wind up being barred from seeking public office again, if they were just exposed, if the truth would just come out. It's kind of like what happened in South Africa. There were no prosecutions. That was the agreement. We will call it the Truth and Reconciliation hearings. And anyone, black or white, Afrikaner or indigenous person, anyone who committed a crime, although resistance in that instance, I fail to see how it's a crime, but anyone who committed a crime, could come forth, state his case or her case, this is what I did, and just getting it out would be enough.
So it can finally be exposed to the light.
Right. So people can understand. It wasn't to seek revenge. It was to show how deeply corrupt the society in South Africa had become. We needed a Truth and Reconciliation Commission after our murderous adventures in Central America, this time back in the 80s. You know, forget back at the turn of the 20th century. Just this last time, and it never occurred. So it's a shame that we are not as mature a society as that took over in South Africa, where they said, okay, we're going to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We're going to get it out. Now, I'm not saying that South Africa has now become, you know, this beacon of free enterprise and freedom and so on and so forth. They are suffering as South Africa, as the whole continent seems almost predetermined to suffer. I've never seen anything like it, but at least the attempt was made. And that's what
Mike,
I was.
Two years ago, most of the country would never have dreamed that we could have a black man entering the presidency. We can only speculate as to how mature this country will get in 8 years. 8 years ago, we never thought the country would sink as deep as it has.
That's true.
So it's very difficult to speculate. I'll leave you with just this one thought. I believe that Limbaugh and Hannity and all these other screamers who are attacking Obama before he's even taken office, I believe that they're screaming about their own impending irrelevance. The monster screams loudest at the end of the movie, and
I
believe it's the end of the movie for these people.
I hope
they
you're right.
They are irrelevant, Mike.
I hope that's the case. I believe that. I mean, I've been thinking that recently about how irrelevant these pieces of human waste have now become.
Overnight.
I hope that the support systems that keep them breathing, whether it's bolts of electricity or, in this case, corporate sponsorship or whatever it is, I hope those support systems will leave. Let these son of a bitches continue to broadcast. Let them do it on the internet. Let them charge admission fee. Let them cluster about them, the white hooded sons of bitches that find them so attractive. That's fine with me.
Yep.
All right, AJ, thanks for checking in, man.
Thanks for all your good work.
All right, take care, pal. We'll talk again. Take care. I've got Molly's runny nose. I'm sorry. Oh, God. But you know what? I wouldn't trade having a four-year-old for anything in the world. Having a four-year-old again. Even though, it gets pretty risky when you're my age and your kid brings home one of these horrendous viruses. Ah! Oh, well. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. So stick around, okay? We got three open lines if you want to get anything said tonight. 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
Backslapping haters of hippies like me. Tree-hugging, peace-loving, pot-smoking, porn-watching, lazy-ass hippies like me. Tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay-wedding, widespread-digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy-minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christians. Right-wing Republicans.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 I told him once.
Faster than a flying monkey. More powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Angelica is calling from Germany, listening on the internet. Angelica, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. You need to get the flu shot, by the way.
Already did, months ago.
Oh, you did? Well, then.
Back in September.
Oh, okay, good. Good for you. Everybody should do that. As what AJ said, I just wanted to have a quick comment on that. The way Bush has been behaving lately, that's very suspicious to me. you know, like a child who's really, really been bad and then who doesn't want to get punished, then they act really, really good, you know, to try to avoid that punishment. That's how he seems to me. Does he not to you?
I never thought that George W. Bush really wanted to be president of the United States, except for the fact that it would be like doing an awful lot of cocaine or having a great big beer party. It was just a lark to him, just like going into the military. I believe he was truly, literally, just a piece that Cheney and the rest of the people in this fascist takeover of the United States used. They just stuck him out front, told him what to say, and he was enough of a jerk to just go along with it.
Broke to China now, and he does know that. Punishment is imminent.
I don't think Bush thinks he is due any punishment. I think his apparent change in attitude or whatever it is just that he is relieved to have this come to an end. I don't think I think he understood his own limitations. He knew he couldn't be. Look, this is a guy who likes to do drugs, chase women, get drunk, hang out with his buddies, talk trash, run companies into the ground. And I think he knew somewhere inside of him, he knew his own limitations. This is a punk who realized he was a punk. And I think he's just glad to be out of there.
Well, I agree with you on that. And speaking of talking trash, I heard him today, and I'm just livid about this, to say about Obama. He says, this guy is going to bring a great sense of family to the White House. This guy, you know, talking about the president-elect, is going to, you know, a president who's not able to speak right, and he can't say he's going to.
No.
And a Palin is doing the same thing. You know, says, let me. And it's what's going to happen, and you know this kind of talk. I'm just so sick of it, and I just love your Obama clips. They, you know, they're just so heartwarming, and they just denounce change, you know, from all this misery, you know, that we've been having to listen to your clips in the past.
Yeah, I hear you.
So thank you for those. Thank you. You know, they're just very inspiring.
Sure.
If I can give you a real quick remark
sure.
on what you said earlier about you know, the animosities towards the Hispanics.
Uh-huh.
You know, you say that that perhaps listening to Sean Hannity and what's it? I don't know. I don't know who these people are. I just hear you mentioning them, but they're right wing commentators, I think, from Fox. But you know, then I don't understand why. In the liberal community, there seems to be a very, very a big amount of animosities, too. And they're certainly not listening to those people. Not to a point, of course, where they would conduct violence like that.
Uh-huh.
But just to a point where they are willing to leave these people without health insurance, to where they would help out the Minutemen to and those are cruel people down there and criminals,
right.
As far as I'm concerned, those Minutemen down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And they would help them out and do anything just to keep them out. And I was just very, very shocked to hear that. And I witnessed this exchange, you know, and I got into it it was a couple of years ago and I'm still, you know, thinking about that, and I just can't forget that. I said, well, are you going to let a man, you know, because he's, first of all, I hate that word illegal. No person is illegal. That's just, I hate that expression, but that's what they call him, you know, illegal. So are you going to let this person, you know, with her arm hanging off or about to suffer a heart attack, you're not going to let him have medical care
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, he is quote-unquote illegal? Yes, that was the answer.
Well, I think we have to understand a couple of things about Republicans. First, the reason the Republican leadership talks so incoherently and with such garbled, asinine English is because that's who they're addressing. You know, earlier in the program tonight, I was talking about the only place in the United States that saw an increase in Republican votes from George Bush to John McCain was in this swath of territory that sweeps down. It pretty much it covers Appalachia. And these are isolated parts of the country that are filled chock-a-block with ignorance. This is, you know, I make jokes about this is where the snake handlers live, the people who think that Jesus wants you to reach your hand into a bag of rattlesnakes to prove your faith. This is where the religious nutballs live. This is where education is secondary or tertiary. It really doesn't even matter. Education doesn't matter. This is where if you're living a good Christian life, you'll marry your first cousin. If you're being a sinner, you'll have sex with your sister or your brother. But, it is an awkward, backward, terrible cesspool part of the country. It also happens to be one of the most beautiful parts of the country. But the people who live there, who are desperately in need of this socialism, this democratic socialism that they're all terrified of because they've been told to be terrified of it by Hannity and Dobbs and Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs. These people who desperately need that kind of socialism vote against it because they are ignorant. They have no worldview. They have no overarching view. They don't see their place in society. They don't understand what a society is to begin with. If it goes beyond their snake handling, lie drinking church, it's just but I digress. Back to your phone calls. Stan is calling from Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Stan.
Dan. Dan is the name.
Oh, boy, Dan. All right. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, what a voice in Germany. Yeah. That you were talking earlier in the show about World War One, Two, and et cetera.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran.
Uh-huh.
And I come from a super high-falutin corporate family.
Uh-huh.
Not just a second, my grandmother. So I got pretty good insights. And as far as these wars and stuff, if you call these people, these corporate people, maniacs, that word wouldn't mean nothing. You have to actually be with these people, live around them. Otherwise, that word has no meaning because you have to experience it. The word will have no meaning when you hear the word megalomaniac. The wars have been ran by these people. This is a game to them. They don't get off on anything else. They get a Maserati. They can have Lear jets. They can have anything they want. These people are gods. And gods and humans, there's a big, gigantic divide there. So these people get off on this stuff, and this is a game to them. This
right.
is a game like there's a game like Strategio, where you have a board game, and you take over countries, and you have battles. You have armies, and you roll the dice. You know, this is how they get off on. I mean, they really get off on this stuff.
I know. And another thing about that, Dan, the people who make these horrendous decisions are the ones who come up with the wedge issues, whether it's same-sex couples being able to form a legal contract sanctioned by the state and call it marriage, whether or not a woman has the right to privacy to make critical decisions regarding whether or not she wants to remain pregnant. Just on and on. They come up with these issues, and they push these issues as though they are critical to the survival of the society, which they are not, never have been, never will be. But the mouth breathers, the knuckle draggers, the dumb bastards who are Republicans buy into it time and time again. And once the Republican politicians get elected, they turn around, take down their pants, and relieve themselves all over these dumbasses who just voted them in. 2 years later, they do it again. 2 years later, they do it again. 2 years later, they do it again. Which I think is a clear indication of the level of the butt level of absolute stupidity and ignorance of Republican voters. So-called, these are not conservatives. These are monkeys. These are like chattering monkeys in Borneo or some. They're worse than monkeys. The monkeys in Borneo at least have a reason, a purpose for living. These people don't have one. It's astonishing. And when they see that Hannity or Limbaugh or Dobbs or the rest of these thug bastards make tens of millions of dollars a year, for some reason they think that these swine are talking to them, that what they have to say means something. When the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the corporate masters laugh and laugh and laugh at these dumbasses, and every 2 years, they do it again. It's astonishing to me.
You lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie. You frickin' liar. You frickin' liar.
Well, it changed after September the 11th. It changed because we're no longer safe.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
You've lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie.
Welcome back. Thanks to the crew. Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, answer your telephone calls. Ben Birch, our podcast manager and technical advisor. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy, who usually suffers mightily on a day like today. The ethical advisors for the Molloy program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Our economic advisor is Bruce Enberg, and the executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. Marcus is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Hey, Marcus.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm sorry that you're about your cold, man. Hope you feel better.
Hey, I love being sick.
Hey, man. But listen, man, I just want to say I really appreciate all the fine work you do, man. I've been listening for weeks, and I've learned so much from you, and I appreciate your viewpoints.
Well, listen, thank you.
Now, I'm a card-carrying Democrat.
Uh-huh.
And I'm happy my man won.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I got to say that as an American,
right,
even in spite of that, I'm still embarrassed by Sarah Palin.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's a woman who clearly is in waters that's uncharted,
uh-huh,
clearly is in water way over her head,
oh, yeah,
way beyond her pay grade. And the Republicans don't have enough temerity, even after the election, to say, you know what, we picked the wrong person, this person's not it. And they're giving indications like she's the future of the Republican Party.
Hey,
frankly,
listen. Hey, I hope she is.
Well, you know, even at that, but if she is, the Republican Party is in far worse condition than even we know now.
You know what I think? I think the Republican Party is a corpse, Marcus. It's absolutely a corpse. It's a stinking corpse. And if Sarah Palin is the new face of the Republican Party, I applaud that. I say, hip, hip, who damn Ray. And why? Because look at what happened this time. You know, regardless of what people think of John McCain, and I think he was a war criminal, adding Sarah Palin to the ticket absolutely guaranteed that he was going to be defeated by anybody. Now,
because he was an arbitrage on his neck.
I would say bring her on. Let her face be out front. She's going to go to this Republican Governor's Conference down in Florida, down in your neck of the woods here this weekend,
yep,
I believe.
Do it. Yeah.
Listen, Republicans, Sarah Palin is your girl. You need her.
Well, you know, there's
drill,
only one
baby,
thing
drill. Kill, baby, kill. What?
There's only one thing about her that's genuine, and that's her blind ambition. This woman's ambition is so ambiguous that she's going to not only cause further embarrassment to her party, further embarrassment to us as Americans in general. I mean, it's no telling the destruction.
No embarrassment to America. Nobody could embarrass America the way the last 8 years of Republican leadership has embarrassed us and turned us into an outlaw nation. So I'm not the least bit interested, or I'm least bit concerned, I should say, Marcus, that Sarah Palin is going to embarrass us about anything. The rest of the world understands that this society is went through a mild nervous breakdown starting in 2000, and a major nervous breakdown, a complete break with reality, is on the horizon unless we can pull it together over the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Barack Obama will be the president for the next eight. You can count on that. And I think that the rest of the world looks at freaks and idiots and trolls like Sarah Palin and the rest of these people as freaks and idiots and trolls. They see Sarah Palin and the Republicans as a force that America turned its back on November 4th and said, no, God damn it, no, God damn it, no. I think that's how the world sees it. So, and even if that's not the case, nobody could embarrass or humiliate or denigrate the United States the way George Bush and Dick Cheney and the Republicans have done for the past 8 years. Nobody could do a better job of making us look like a society of half-witted freaks than these people have done. So Sarah Palin is the pimple on the ass of the body politic of this country. I say bring her on, stick her out front. Let her be the face of the Republican Party. I'm all for it. I completely agree with it. I think it's wonderful. Get her out there. There's your girl, Republicans. Go for it. Because every time this freak opens her mouth, it's going to increase the number of people who will vote Democrat, and eventually who will vote Liberal Democrat, and eventually will vote Democratic Socialist, because they will look at this freak, and they will look at the people behind her, and they will look at the party she represents, and they'll say, no, hell no. Did that come through okay? Do you understand what I'm saying, Marcus? I think you do. I think you do, man. Thank you. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate you checking in. Jeff is calling from New York City. Jeff, welcome to the program. Hey, Jeff. Have we got Jeff or don't we have Jeff? All right. Let's see if we can get Jeff. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Jeff's gone? All right, Jeff. Well, you had a chance, man. We're out of time anyway. Hey, we're getting up on the Christmas season. I don't know about where you live, but here in the Metro Atlanta area, a couple small towns have already got their holiday stuff out on the boulevards and streets, and a couple of the malls have already probably all the malls have already started. Kathy had to take Molly to Macy's the other day, and they came home, and Molly said, "Daddy, at the mall they've already got a place for Santa Claus." But the reason I bring that up, the Christmas wars this year are going to be absolutely mind-boggling. You know what I mean by the Christmas wars. You know, put Christ back in Christmas. The retailers are about to all go belly up. They don't want Christ anywhere near Christmas. They want the money! The money! Show me the money! I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.